Season 4, Episode 11, The Things We Do for Fun. And a warning, this episode discusses fatalities. Alan reflects on the prosecution's impending coronial inquest on fatalities of the 6 Tasmanian children. The team grapples with the loss of innocent lives and reference the Queensland Amusement Device Code of Practice 2023. Sarah shifts the discussion on workplace protections to people and culture. These considerations provide rationale yet again on the need for human factors professionals to be embedded in organisations and organisational strategies. Sarah opines. Hello and welcome to the Why Work podcast series. You are listening to Trace Vitkovsky, Sarah Pazell and Alan Girl.
So, Trajan, I want to raise another case that's going through the system at the moment. By the time we go to air, it will be resolved. And I think it could potentially be the biggest case that we have for this year, or maybe even for next year as well. So we might end up talking about it again. And my focus was brought onto the case because of one of our listeners had posted something on LinkedIn, and I had a look at that and responded to him on it. But in Tasmania at the Hillcrest Primary School, they had an event which they called the Big Day In. And at that event, they had assembled a jumping castle and some Zorb balls. They're those balls. I think you've been in one where you climb inside the Zorb balls.
Yes, like a soccer ball.
And they roll
do
around.
Do people push you around while you're in the ball?
Especially a soccer ball.
Righto. Good fun. Recommended?
Yes. Especially when you're perfectly round and symmetrical like me. You roll with the ball.
Are they the same ones they do on the river and water and things?
Balls.
Anyway, so it was a very tragic event. The jumping castle was lifted up into the air, and witnesses say that it went into the air 10 metres, although there was no actual way of checking that, so that's just what witnesses believe. And as a result of the jumping castle being lifted into the air, 6 children lost their lives. The 6th child took a while before Chase Harrison died, and there were 3 other children injured, so 9 in total. And that 2 years after the incident, so it was on the 16th of December 2021, we've got charges, a Category 2 charge against a sole trader trading with a business name and no one else, so the school has not been charged. And we've got a coronial inquest that's been paused pending the outcome of the prosecution. Of course, all of this you'd be very familiar with. We don't really know yet the facts, because there hasn't been a judgment on the facts. There was also a Supreme Court application that occurred in the background. So there's lots and lots of aspects about this case, and I'm sure you've been in cases like this in the past.
Oh, well, what do you think of 6? That's extraordinary.
It could be the biggest one for Australia.
Yeah. When you said Category 2, immediately Section 32, maximum fine, $1.5 million.
For a sole trader, it's $150,000.
The PCBU being a corporation, 1.5. So my point is, I'm thinking big immediately. So multiple deaths, 6 young lives have been lost. Immediately, again, I know nothing about the case. My first reaction is Section 31, reckless, really heightened, a heightened state of affairs. So for me, I'm curious immediately about it being Section 32.
There's no industrial manslaughter in Tasmania at the moment.
I mean, immediately I thought industrial manslaughter, then I realised, hang on, it's Tasmania. Yeah. But 31 is reckless. And as you know, we've had a series of reckless prosecutions.
Well, what our listener commented on was that the maximum penalty is $150,000. And so for what could be the most serious case this year and next year, the penalty can't be larger than 150, and it's probably going to be, it might be 100,000.
That's extraordinary, to quote you, Alan.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
We were just talking about the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator getting an over $2 million fine, and so here we have a comparable case where it might be 100,000.
Let's just stay with this for a while, because we're dealing with, this gets about as humanly factorial as it ever gets. You are dealing with 6 lost lives. So an absolutely, I was going to say a poor design, an absolutely no design situation here.
And innocence with children. So that
it's sort of like acrobats or gymnasts. Having a bit of a go and going, you know what, let's see how far this castle goes before we do a triple spin tumble. So we're dealing with innocent lives, and that does pause me to think about prosecution I'd done a few years ago with respect to a year for a 9-year-old child where a beach umbrella, a gust of wind uplifted it, and it resulted in fatal in Bundaberg. So these are innocent people, innocent lives. We expect to protect them. They are the ones that need to be protected the most. So for me, and I imagine for the rest of the listeners, they'd be wondering, what, are you kidding me? 150K max?
Max.
Wait a minute.
And Alan, how does that sit? Do you remember we spoke about in earlier episodes, we spoke about in the UK how they had tiered penalties based on sort of the size of a business, and you were concerned in Australia.
It would be harder to reconcile, but we don't have that in Australia. But it does lead to Tasmania is a different state to the rest of the states and territories in Australia in that it has a small population and it's surrounded by water, of course. So maybe the deterrent
Australia, small population surrounded by water.
Comparably. Because maybe from a deterrence perspective, you don't need to have as high a fine in Tasmania, but I do find that a bit hard to swallow. I think, you know, we're going to have a very low fine that's going to be imposed. And I think people are going to be angry. I think they're going to be very upset. I think a lot is going to be written about this case.
But it's interesting because at the moment a lot isn't written. I guess I'm comparing the Dreamworld tragedy and just the international press. Perhaps this is a received international press, I don't know. But I certainly haven't read a lot about it. But I recall just how much information was out there in the public domain prior to sentencing of Dreamworld incident. So see, we'll watch this space.
Well, one of the things that we've seen, of course, in other cases is where the regulators don't take firm action and there's been a fatality, and of course we've got six fatalities here, the coroner can come in and say, it's not enough, there needs to be a prosecution. So you can be 6 years after the event, and then all of a sudden, off the back of what the coroner has said, you can have a fresh prosecution at that point in time.
So, Trish, let's pause on this for a moment and reflect on sort of your passion about health and safety, legislation, regulation, and just management in recreation. Because here's yet another example where it's a recreation business, it's somebody's workplace. But when it's fun and there's a thrill and there's a bit of excitement, sometimes your idea of risk management just seems to dissipate. Not yours personally, but the public.
Mine gets heightened. And you know what? And it's funny because I've still my own thunder here. 2024, the research project, Sarah, if you're interested, is I'm going to specifically explore tourism and under that, the broader rubric of, so I'm going to be looking at that particular case, obviously Dreamworld, and obviously White Island, all the things that we've talked about. You know, and you know why I'm doing it. I find it quite extraordinary because I've started my literature review. I can count on one hand how many research articles exist on what appears to be the most tragic of all workers' health and safety duties. 6 young children dying, 4 innocent patrons at Dreamworld, yet there's hardly any research on the good, the fun things. So apart from that excellent information from the coronial inquest, the human factors expert in the Dreamworld, there seems to be no appetite. So I'm doing it, A, because I'm really dig this stuff, but B, I find it curious that other academics do not, and I wonder, is this because it's not hard, like it's not mining, it's not rail, it's not trucking, it's not factories.
It's the things we do for fun. So I mean, we even had a fatality at iFly, and I've gone to iFly with my son, and a police officer who you would think is a good risk assessor died, you know, here in Brisbane.
Because they're expecting not to die.
You expect, it's fun, but you're flying in the middle of the air in a tunnel with, you know, hard structure all around you where you certainly could fall from heights, right? Let's just call it like it is. Yeah,
but recreation is a thing. Even when I'm thinking about the dam case involving the Bedford Weir I did many years ago, those people were recreating. They were having a swim at the dam. They weren't workers. Mm. They weren't people assembling a dam or working on the structure like in the other case in Mackay involving the cofferdam, who were workers where the worker had perished. This was a young person, a young child, again, under five, who had drowned, but the sole purpose was to have a picnic on the day. And I'm taking this up because no one else seems to be doing it. So any other researchers keen? You know where to find
me? If you put yourself in the position of the executive director of WorkSafe for Tasmania, it would have been a very difficult decision for her to make about how I should act in response to this matter. And, you know, the article that you're talking about could be very helpful in just reconciling how tough do I go, how hard do I go, you know, what is our role as an organisation in responding to this incident? Yeah. Do I take into account that this is going to be big Australia-wide, or do I just focus on it being big in Tasmania?
If you want to know what's happening, I would say call your colleagues in Queensland especially, and perhaps New South Wales, where these recreational things have occurred, so whether they're umbrellas that have been unsecured right through to rides overturning. I would say communicate and talk, because there are some learnings under the harmonise.
Well, Sarah dug out an article where one of these jumping castles had flown 150 metres.
Really?
That's amazing.
So this is, it's easy for everyone to be in silos. The first thing I would do is, you know what, crocodiles seem to attack people, islands seem to erupt. Some people have gone through some of these processes, communicate and talk, because people who put on their slip, slop, slap, put on a hat, who expect to have the best day of their life, die.
There are known fatal hazards. And what you're saying is there's some storytelling that can be shared, because there are known fatal hazards.
I think there's also a big story. You put yourself in the boots of the decision maker about whether or not you prosecute. Of course there's guidelines. For example, in Queensland you've got the BPT guidelines, which you apply, but at the end of the day you have to have a judgment.
Say that again.
DPP.
Director of Public Prosecution Guidelines.
But I'm not sure if the stories are being told in recreation.
At the end of the day, there's a human being that has to make a decision.
Yeah.
And they've weighed up all those things, and there'll still be some discretion at the end.
Yeah.
What do I do? What is the right thing to do?
So you're talking about, Trej, the Amusement Devices Code of Practice 2023 for Queensland.
Brand new.
Brand new. Well, everything old is new again, I'd say. But the thing is, so we just need to build a new body of knowledge around these are evolving. Is just that, it's fun. And I think it's taking a lot longer for people to appreciate, no, this is work. So it's more than just creating excellent guidelines and using the full force of the law to ensure compliance. This is slightly more anthropological in that this stuff's dangerous, and let's start to elevate its seriousness. That's what I'm saying.
Can I tell you guys something that's emerging in the human factors world that's quite exciting, because it really announces the role of human factors when you're looking at technologies? And I say that word loosely. So you have technology readiness levels when you're developing and designing, developing, releasing, planning to release for live work any technology like NASA. Well, a corollary to that, the sister to that, is human readiness levels. So there's 9 technology readiness levels. There are now a draft standard. There's draft standards and some research on the human readiness levels. And this is significant because it provides that rationale of why you need a human factors assessment at every point of adoption of technology in your business. It's to partner with the design and development. But to me, I think you can think about it when you're welcoming technology in your business. So it might be things like, you know, augmentative reality and artificial intelligence, but also things like, any headwear. And I think about technology as being any artifact, things like a truck, things like a ride, a piece of equipment, you start to go, okay, what are these 9 levels of human readiness? And it starts with what most people think of, that very first basic level in ergonomics. People think, oh, okay, if I was going to assess, you know, some head-mounted gear, some displays, I'd start to look at what are the issues, like whether it fits, is it excessively heavy, can people tolerate this on their neck, does it cause visual fatigue, etc. And then you start to go down to, all right, the next level, and this is still just basic levels, what is the population of people that this technology suits? So does it exclude anyone? Is it really universal design? And if it excludes someone, that's okay, you just gotta know it. So for rides, amusement parks, you have those little, you know, I must be this tall. Yeah. If I'm not this tall, it's not safe for me to sit in that seat, right? So you've gotta now write the parameters on who does this technology suit. 5th to 95th percentile anthropometrics is a real basic one that you hear a lot in seat, you know.
So Sarah, all of that science, that just translates to that little line that you see on the board. So all of those metrics, really.
That's that can you walk past this little line.
I could probably do
and
that.
And that's when, like, you gave the example when the girl's going, oh, yeah. No, come on, yeah, you can, I want to go on anyway. Yeah. So they overruled what was already established in a fundamental aspect of human use of that equipment, right?
Okay, that's first part, get the height right.
Get the height right.
Okay, first
but
part.
Any parameters of what type of population, cohort of workers could use this technology, right?
Yep.
And then you start looking at the next stage is, you know, does it support human performance, and are there interactions, technology interactions established, right? So these are just basic functional needs. Yep. Are they clarified? And it goes through, there's different phases, right? So that very first phase is all about that very basic human research. And then it goes into the second phase of technology demonstrations. What are your trials? What are your demonstrations? What are the use cases? And you can start that with your design teams, and it evolves to starting to go, well, then we're going to use people in focus groups who know the tasks, right? And it goes through another 3 levels. And then the last 3 levels are more about production and deployment. So use in real life scenarios and varying scenarios, and the evaluation, which is, hello, the custodian stewardship stuff. Are you continually evaluating it? And do you have that system in place? So that 9th level of operational use and ongoing monitoring is that level 9. And would you have a process to continually give feedback to any suppliers or designers of equipment? So think about that for everything that you're learning from, and this would cause you to do literature reviews that you're saying, how do we learn about all the different ways that jumping castles have been problematic? Well, you do that scientific literature review.
Do a systematic review
and you
of
do
that.
Yes, that's right, as well as testing with individuals and your knowledge of, as human factors specialists know, the evolution and ecology of humans. You start testing out new technology against that. If there's nothing historic, you look at other industries, you look at that and do comparisons, right? So 9 levels of human readiness level, to me, really provide a rationale, a foundation for why you include human factors professionals in your business or in your design, if you have industrial designers designing equipment in that process. And you can put that in your procurement schedules. Dear supplier, your dear designer and supplier, I want to see evidence, I want a transparent report on how you tested HRL level 9 the way through.
I'd say this to you, Sarah, I'd go, right, dear supplier, I've had all my carnies, they're all been in the focus group, and I paid them all for their time, I gave them a per diem, and then I loaded up all of the kiddies with as much fairy floss as they could eat.
Sugar?
Yeah.
Because they jump higher.
And they're all hyped up. Now design it, because what I see that's missing, and I don't think you can compare like for like all of these, they're psychosocial factors, all of these factors.
Huge.
You've got excitable kids, you've got stressed out parents, they're carrying show bags, the environment is bedlam. It's not controlled like mining or engineering or designing a lovely Boeing aircraft. You're dealing with madness. It's like
I'm
a rock
so glad
concert.
You said that, because that is that level 9 about. Of ongoing monitoring, and that is, it is something that I talk a lot about in mining, right? But the busyness, the surprise functions, the unexpected. You've got to design for the unexpected. And I often tell equipment designers, you may be designing for these population of workers considering that they're in a prime state. state of operation. So if you think of the dream world, you know, you might think, we're just considering everybody's in a prime state. I said, now, go back to talk about those realities. Just as you said, Trish, if it's mining, somebody has worked a 12-hour shift, you know, they're on their fifth or seventh day. They've had, maybe had to work with a lot of outdoors, you know, heat, wind, humidity, rain, whatever. They are completely fatigued. They had a poor relationship with a maintenance manager, whatever, right? Get it some context. Put flesh on the bones.
Can I add this? Poor relationship with their partner because they've been flying in and flying out. And now they're getting cranky texts. I thought you were supposed to come home Friday.
That's often ignored.
Why did you take the extra shift? Well, because we've got to pay the mortgage. We've had 9 interest rate rights. Do you see the level of particularity I'm descending?
I want that nuanced consideration in design. And that's why I'm saying you need that ongoing design. Exactly. That granularity, that nuanced kind of assessment. Because then you go back to the equipment designer and say, don't design for someone in a prime state. Design for someone in an eroded state, a poor state. And then you get more robust design strategy. And it's not just a piece of equipment, it is that, but it's a work system. Dear decision makers, dear executive board, dear C-suite, design your system now for an eroded state of performance.
Ooh, I love that. What do you think, Ellen?
Whole nother level of thinking.
Well, look, this will interest you.
Next level.
I like that. I like to go next level. Go on, tell me.
This will interest you because I don't think people can hide anymore. Now, one of the things that's happening right now is one of the investigative bodies and I probably shouldn't name it, but they're starting to use artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is the business entity, doesn't matter whether it's a mine or whatever it is, it could be a railway company, it could be a trucking company, it could be anything.
Construction,
really.
Transport. Yep.
So they back up a truckload of paper and they throw it on the regulator. And of course, it's very hard for humans to digest that information, but it's very easy for computers, particularly artificial intelligence, because artificial intelligence can draw connections between dots that we couldn't do, say, 2 years ago.
So trend analysis and taxonomies
Right. So the very stuff that you're talking about, you back up a truckload of papers, give it to the regulator, and they'll look at it, and then they'll say, this thing that we're concerned about has happened 100 times over the last 2 years. It's a game changer. That's really going to change things.
Yeah,
for the strength of their prosecutions.
Not just for the strength of the prosecution. Businesses will not be able to say, this is a one-off thing.
We didn't know.
This is just, it would never happen again. It was an aberration. You were to say, work design and are people getting fatigued and accidents are happening because they're fatigued. That's the sort of thing that it's hard for a human to collect that information together and join the dots, but artificial intelligence is really good at doing that.
So you want to make sure that as a business that you've got access to that same information to make good decisions, right?
Yeah, you want to beat the regulator.
You want to beat the regulators. Yeah. You want to have access to that, and you would hope that that's shared as much as possible. As you said, what was the term you used? Is about landing gently for the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator.
Nicely.
So it's shared information. There's distributed awareness about whatever's happening. Everybody's educated. That's why I wish standards were accessible, because it's hard for people to meet standards.
Australian standards,
ISO standards, expensive. You've got to pay for them. They're expensive for small to medium businesses, particularly.
Especially if you've got to get half a dozen.
Yeah. And you don't even know exactly if you need that until you've purchased it and read it all.
Okay, safety nicely.
You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you really enjoyed this show, share this with a friend. Submit your 5-star rating on your favourite podcast streaming service. Keep listening and send in your stories. You can email us at hello@whywork.com.au. And of course, sign in to our newsletter. You can head straight to our website at www.whywork.com.au. We can't wait to learn about the trouble you've seen in the workplace. And remember, none of the things we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work, and we hope you enjoyed as much as we do. We love it. See you next time.